Good morning. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Janine, and this is Get the Funk Out. And if you're not familiar with my show, you can head on over to the show blog, which is getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. I've been doing the show since 2011, which I cannot believe. And if you're not familiar with KUCI, visit our website at kuci.org, and you can visit our socials at KUCI FM. So standing by to kick off the show is Benjamin Wagner, and he's actually a fellow Syracuse University alum who I met recently. And wow, is he creative. He has a new film out, but I want to tell you a little bit about him. He's a consultant, creative, founder of Essential Industries, a boutique consulting firm specializing in individual and organizational strategy, transformation, communication, and collaboration. And like I said, he attended Syracuse University. He was in a band throughout his time at Syracuse. We caught up on that. And he has a new film out. Friends and Neighbors is out now. And he's here to join us now. Welcome to the show, Benjamin.
Well, thank you. Pleased to be here.
Great to connect. We were doing a LinkedIn Live last week. That was fun.
It sure was. It was a great conversation. I hope we have one here.
No,
that
absolutely.
We will.
Absolutely. So we were talking on Mental Health Action Day, which was great, and I wanted to have you back. We're still in May, so Mental Health Awareness Month.
Yeah.
And I wanted to dive in and have you talk about your new film, Friends and Neighbors, and how that came about.
So a decade or more ago, I made a film called Mr. Rogers and Me about meeting Fred Rogers, America's favorite neighbor, in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood on Nantucket. My mom rented a cottage next door to his. We had a couple of meaningful conversations. And what I found was that he was very much the same person in real life as he was on television, and that was massively inspiring. And he asked me really hard questions about my upbringing and really thoughtful questions. And what I've come to realize is that he's the same guy.
Yeah.
And so a decade later, I'm it's post COVID, or we're just sort of exiting COVID. I have left New York City after 25 years as a executive at MTV News and Facebook. I am coming off of traveling the world for Facebook, and I'm not great. I'm coping with some fairly unhealthy practices,
mm-hmm.
Too many beers after the end of the day, et cetera.
Yeah.
And I'm depressed and anxious, and I have been for years, according to my New York therapist,
yeah.
but never really got at the why.
Yeah.
And I went to a new guy, and he said to me, I gave him my life story, which I just gave you a poor approximation of a second ago there.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me, well, all that unhealthy coping sounds like a really reasonable response to quite a bit of post-traumatic stress in adolescence in particular, and living and working in, one of America's largest and loudest cities and traveling the world at big companies under duress.
And boom.
Went, huh? Yeah. And I hadn't even heard, honestly, post-traumatic stress related to any context outside of the military or first responders. And,
mm-hmm.
So spent a few more minutes talking to him, and he's like, it's actually quite a bit more pervasive than we talk about in culture. And I did a little learning about the basics of the brain and what happens to our frontal lobe, and I thought, oh boy, this is happening all around. And
mm-hmm.
this is a lot of we're hearing from the Surgeon General on mental health stuff with our kids. We're getting insight on what's happening with social media and isolation. And I was like, oh, this is like a fundamental.
Right.
And so
yes.
I just thought, we need to talk about this more, because no one's ever said it to me until this gentleman. And I hopefully have been party to these kinds of substantive conversations for my whole life. So
yes.
I just, realized that it was undergirding so much of what was happening in culture and society, that I just thought, I will raise my hand and try and tell this story. So
no, it's great.
As I sort of took my own, what I've come to learn is often referred to as the healing journey,
mm-hmm.
addressing my adverse childhood experiences and how that impacted how I sort of processed the world as a young adult and an adult. I brought a camera along and asked people questions. And so the movie is in part my story and in part our story. Fred always used to say, the most personal is often the most universal. And so it is a little bit of both, with an emphasis on the us over the me. I just am the narrator and the through line, but it's very
sure.
much about you know, I've screened it. I'm actually in Earlham, Iowa. I'm screening in Des Moines, Iowa tonight. This is the state I was born in.
Where you're from, yeah.
And as you recall from the film, we shot at the Iowa State Fair and with mm-hmm. my friend Kelly Ray, who I met in New York but is from Iowa. So I'm bringing it back to this community. And, you know, what you find after these screenings is half a dozen people wait in line to talk to you about their stuff. And they say, this is exactly my life. And I was like, I know.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure it's many of our lives. That's the why. Yeah.
And I feel that it's so important to encourage today's youth to be open in any way possible. They feel comfortable and to deal with whatever post-COVID or pre-COVID mental mm-hmm. health issues, because they should not become us. They should not become adults who really are struggling and they don't know because they haven't unpacked their backstory.
Yeah, and it's funny, I got an email last night from a guy who came to a screening whose daughter goes to my daughter's school, and mm-hmm. he was like, don't you worry about, this guy's a contemporary, so he's a Gen Xer, right? And he says, don't you worry about people knowing your baggage. And I get the question.
Too late.
And I totally, but I was like, I said, well, yeah, but to be honest, carrying that baggage wasn't worth the weight. And, you know, it was too heavy, and I didn't want to carry it anymore. And I feel like so many of us are performing like mm-hmm. everything's just fine. And, like, the fact is, I'm much happier not carrying the baggage or carrying it and saying, hey, this baggage is heavy. Is yours heavy, you know?
Yes.
There's something in the sharing. And, I spoke at a high school, actually my high school, last week. And I wrote my speech more for the parents than the kids, because I had a hunch that the kids, best I could tell, you know, they understand the idea that the breath helps them to re-regulate, right?
Yes.
They have some practices in place, but it's the parents who have no idea what they're unconsciously repressing and have no idea that they're not allowed to feel their feelings that really needed to hear me.
Yes.
I got a couple of dads on the way out thanking me, so I feel like I especially when I get dads, I feel like I might be getting somewhere. Because, you know.
Really? That's good.
Well, women have cultural approval, if you will, right, to be sensitive and thoughtful and to dance and to sing and do things that men aren't allowed to do, quote unquote, and mm-hmm. speaking in very broad terms, right? So when a dad comes up to me and says, thanks for, you know, reminding me how to take a deep breath, I'm like, okay, well, that's a start.
It's so
and
important.
And that's all I hoped I could do here. I mean, this is as grassroots independent film as it gets. And I just hope every time somebody sees it, if you can just, you know, I'm sure you feel this way mm-hmm. with the show, if you can just shake people's thinking or nudge it just a little bit,
right.
Who knows how many people you can, you know, an airplane takes off at a, you know, 5% incline, right? But over time, that gets to 30,000 feet and can get you thousands of miles away. What happens if we can just create some little nudges here?
Exactly. And don't you think, Benjamin, that as you began, I don't know how long it took you to become sober, but I know for me, like, once I stopped having all these crutches and you know, things I leaned into, and I was sober, that everything became so crystal clear to the point of painful. And so you're
sure.
And so until you can see and examine and be open, and it's uncomfortable and sit in the discomfort, then you'll learn to find some meaning from it.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny, like, here I'm a singer-songwriter, right? So, like, I've been singing about my feelings for 30 years,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know that I was feeling them. And, of course, if I had, you know, in my 20s, I would smoke pot and drink beer, and I luckily got rid of the pot, but kept drinking the beer. And, mm-hmm. like, you know, my wife was, when I told her I was going to stop, she was like, wait, why? I don't even think you have a problem. And I was like, well, I don't know what a problem needs to look like, but I think drinking three of anything every night for 20 years is worth examining.
Yeah, that's exactly
and at the end
right.
of the, yeah. And at the end of the day, it was just, let's say it cut, like, 15% of my capacity to feel, and mm-hmm. frankly, probably it was more in the aggregate. But to your point, once that was taken away, and once I left New York City, where, you know, I would put on headphones and a baseball cap and sunglasses and a suit and kind of gird up for the subway like a gladiator,
right.
you know, and so your muscles are gripping, and that takes away a little bit of your ability to feel. And so I softened when I left New York City and
mm-hmm.
settled. It's such an interesting word, right? The idea that we settle. But I did. I settled into my own somatic experience. And so I think it was both the sobriety enabling me to feel my feelings in a new way, which initially, it's funny, I was just having this conversation with my buddy here, Jason, who was the first person to say, you know, those non-alcoholic beers taste just fine. He was 2 years ahead of me, and I thought, well, oh, great. So if I can still have the ritual without the buzz, then yeah, let's try that. And
okay,
that was really helpful to me.
Good.
But you got to feel the feelings, right? You got to feel, and they're uncomfortable, and we have entire systems in capitalism that are profiting,
yes,
off of us not feeling our feelings.
That's
there's
right,
great amount of people who are incentivized, or organizations, companies, et cetera, who are incentivized to help us to not feel, right? I just said,
right,
we spend so much time on screens,
yes,
and increasingly in isolation with one in our hand and one in our face, in our lazy boy, not walking, not moving. Or maybe we move, but it's for 30 minutes a day because we have to, not because we need to feel what it feels like to have some sense of what's happening in our guts and in our,
yeah,
you know, in our heart.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was key. Absolutely key.
I want to ask you something, and thank you for sharing that. So
sure,
you and I shared how we went to Syracuse. I was not a great student. I wanted to be a journalism major right when I graduated high school, but I could not get into Newhouse. Fortunately, I was able to create my own major. I had a great advisor,
yeah,
blah, blah, blah. So you kind of had the same trajectory, I think, where we were kind of like B students, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay. But you did graduate from Newhouse. Where did all this drive? Because you end up working for MTV for 18 years. And that just go, 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 and, you know, numb out. And that was intense. I mean, nobody pushed you,
yeah,
to do that, right?
No. It's funny, you know, you may recall in the movie, I talk about standing on the corner right after moving to New York City with my brother,
yeah,
and saying to him, I don't think I can do this. And he takes me back to our apartment and hands me a bong and says, here,
yeah,
try this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not putting it on him. I made a decision. But
yeah,
I think that at that instant, I told myself something true, which is this doesn't feel right. But I didn't listen to me. You know,
yeah.
It's funny. I'm standing at my buddy's 17-acre farm out in the middle of Iowa, west of Des Moines, 20 miles away from where tornadoes wreaked havoc last night.
Whoa.
But it's bucolic. I mean, right now I'm looking out at a lake and a couple of dogs sleeping. And like, this
gorgeous,
is where we come from, right? It's only the last 100, 150 years that we have piled ourselves into skyscrapers on top of one another and into subways. And right, it's all this industrialization that has changed our sort of experience in the world. But up until pretty recently, we were in small groups in small villages living off the land, right? And our brain, as you know better than I, our brain is still wired for, you know, living in small groups and farming or feeding off the land. So I just think I'd, at a certain point, like, I took a hard left turn. And once I was in it, in order to survive, right, fight or flight,
mm-hmm,
in order to survive, I had to adapt. And to adapt, I put on headphones and I, you know, smoked pot and I got ambitious because I knew I had to make that mortgage.
Yes.
And it was a treadmill and I had to stay on it. And P.S., I still have to find a way to have a relationship with part of the real world,
mm-hmm,
because I still have a mortgage. The trick now is how can I do that in a way that feels more aligned with my values and better for me, and who I really am.
Yeah.
And I think that's all of our journey. It's just that I'm not sure many of us figure it out that way. Or, you know, like I think we all drive to 65 and then we get there. And if we're lucky, we have 5 years before we collapse.
Yes.
And
yeah,
I just didn't want to do that. I just,
yes,
didn't want that to happen. But I, you know, to your question about drive, I do think a lot of it was the programming of that place and of our culture. I also love, just to be honest, I love making things and telling stories. I love doing what we're doing. I love,
yeah,
connecting with people and ideas. And I actually think that was the primary driver. I mean, all of the work I ever did, I've ever done, has been around storytelling and community building.
I love
even
that.
At Facebook, which kind of went sideways, but I was traveling the world trying to build relationships to help democracy based on the fact that we believe that fair and free information is,
mm-hmm,
what helps us make good decisions as, you know, in a democratic society.
Sure.
So, like, at the heart of it was always service,
yeah,
you know? And at MTV News, it was the same thing. I mean, when I started there, there was no place for young people to get news and information, not just about pop stars and movie stars, talked about issues that affected them, right? Like, I mean, we forget that MTV News did some very, very important coverage around politics, around social activism.
Yes.
So that was what got me there. And I also happen to love rock and roll. Yeah. But it really all to me is about service and connection and inspiration and art and all that stuff, which is pretty easy to get excited about.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely. I want to add something that I feel that I just made a couple notes based on what you just said, that with all the advances in technology and how fast our world is moving, that this has really tested our work-life balance, and sometimes it's just so lopsided, and it's so important to be conscious about how are you spending your time. You know, are you spending too much time on your phone or not engaged with the people in front of you? What about you? I mean, I tell students, you know, specifically college students, you know, college is not just about being in the classroom. Like, what else are you doing to have that balance, to find meaning, to grow? It's so important.
Well, you know, again, I know I'm speaking to an expert here, but it's all about social connection, right? We are, we are social creatures, and you know, there's a broad definition of trauma that says it's really just about disconnection.
Yes.
So, like, imagine, and I worked really hard at this when I was a dad. I'm not sure how I did, but imagine, you know, your four-year-old comes up to you and you're staring at this rectangle.
I know.
And basically signaling to the four-year-old, go away. This rectangle is of greater import. So, of course, they all desperately want one.
Yes.
You know? And that's just one silly, simple example. So, I don't know. I try really hard to put it down and to prioritize my time and to be as present as I can. I'm not perfect, and I give myself grace when I know I mess up. And, you know, the other part of that connection thing is when we have rupture, right, when we disconnect and we can be self-aware in relationship, then we can repair.
Yes.
And so I try really hard with my kids and with my spouse and with my parents and with the people that I love that when I can feel a rupture in our connection, to try and say, hey, I just felt something shift there, and I think it might have been something I did. Can we talk about that for a second? And
that's
again, these are really simple concepts that I don't think we talk about enough, because it's not the rupture. We're going to rupture. We're going to disconnect. It's the repair, right? It's coming back to Maggie, my almost 14-year-old gasp, and saying, hey, buddy, I think I was a little distracted there, and I might have hurt your feelings. Is that what it felt like for you?
Wow.
And, you know, it changes her whole perspective
of course.
What an adult can be for her.
Yes.
And I think she feels really, really safe with me because of that. And, you know, I'm not shading my parents, but they didn't have any of that insight, you know, and they were young parents.
No, and none of our parents did. No.
No one was talking about that in 1975, right?
Feelings? Come on.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's this phrase, again, you probably know it, transformational character. Like, we can be the transformational characters in the evolution of these generations. And I'm just trying to do my best to show up for my kids and in my relationships in that way. And Lord knows, if you had my wife on a call next week, she'd say, well, let me show you where he fails. And that's true.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to do my best and give myself grace to know that I'm going to mess up, but that I'm going to endeavor to, you know, try and tip the ratio in favor of successful attempts.
Oh, I think that's great. If you're just tuning in, I've been speaking with Benjamin Wagner and about his latest film, Friends and Neighbors. And if you go to the show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org, I have a trailer. I have information about him. I want to mention a couple of things. First of all, I heard this great interview with Anne Lamott on Julia Louis-Dreyfus's new podcast, Wiser Than Me.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So here's a quote. And this quote, Anne said when she was working on getting sober. She just gave up alcohol, and it was so hard, and she was just wanted to be alone. And her friends would call her up and say, no, you know, we need to connect because it's so important to connect with people, especially when you're going through something. And here's the quote. Your mind is a bad neighborhood and you shouldn't be there alone.
Mm.
I love that.
Incredible,
isn't
right?
It?
Yeah, I mean, obviously connected to friends and neighbors. Yeah.
Yeah.
It takes each of us. And in part because we need to feel the joy that we can share. But also when you share something with somebody and they say, I feel that way too.
Yeah.
You feel like less weird. Again, it's so interesting you share that I'm here with my buddy Jason, who's been a dear singer-songwriter pal of mine. I've toured with him for 2 decades, and he was one of those people for me. You know, I felt less alone because he would say, yeah, I feel that way too. And he was a little bit ahead of me on the journey, and we need those people. I love it. Yeah, the brain, right? I mean, again, you know this. The brain is scanning for danger. It's telling stories. It's predicting. And generally, it's just trying to keep you safe. And so right. It's going to look for the worst.
Yes.
It's one of the reasons why a gratitude practice is so useful.
Exactly.
And for walking in nature is so helpful, because if you look for beauty, you'll find beauty. But your brain is looking for danger. So if you're living in New York City, there's lots of it to see, right? And it's no wonder I couldn't sleep at night. I was always worried about what would happen. And then I became a dad, and I'd worry about what's going to happen with my beautiful daughters,
exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, so much to worry about. And I think you need to balance that. That's where meditation and yoga and walks in the woods are just, oh, boy, they're so valuable.
Well, it's great just to tune in to your thoughts, your feelings, your emotions, especially I told you I grew up on East 86th Street, and I've been back there recently. And I feel that, especially post-COVID, and other people have told me this, whether it's a taxi driver or anyone, the city's gotten, you know, a tad more dangerous, and you have to be vigilant. And I've always felt like that, but it felt like I was going out into battle sometimes. Like,
100%.
Okay, where's your wallet? Where are your keys?
100%.
Go ahead.
And so you have to crowd out, right? You have to disassociate a little bit. You have to crowd. I mean, your brain is sorting through all those signals. And, you know, I mean, I definitely saw and experienced a lot of dangerous, uncomfortable stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was assaulted when I was 16. So I was hardwired, and I witnessed domestic violence. So I was hardwired for danger, to be extra vigilant, to be hyper vigilant. So, you know, that made New York City, for my nervous system, it felt great, because my nervous system got to be in the same condition or experience or sort of environment that I grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
But over 25 years, it just became super problematic.
Yes.
And I had no idea, which is, again, back to your first question, why I make a movie and write a book. It's like, because we need to know that this stuff is happening and that it's normal and that we have some agency. There are things that we can do other than cocktail hour, you know?
Exactly. Yes. Definitely.
East 86th. I was on East 71st. Yep.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah. Where did you, but you went to school in Iowa, correct?
No, actually, we moved tons. I went to high school in Pennsylvania. I went to junior high school in Pennsylvania. I went to grammar school in Indiana and Illinois. So we moved quite a bit. My parents moved quite a bit, which did not help that sense of settledness.
Right.
And I rented until I moved out of New York City 5 years ago.
Wow.
So, like, I'm a brand new homeowner in my fifth decade of life.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of transience, and transience doesn't help us to feel a sense of connectedness to anything,
not
because everything around us changes all the time. So, again, just another example of, you know, and now I have my own, you know, nuclear family that I built and chose, and we have a home that, which is one of the reasons the movie begins and ends with a home, with our home. But also, when we're comfortable with our own experiences in our body, we can come home to our body and feel safe in our body. And that's very much the journey, both of sobriety and healing from trauma, which for me were completely connected stories.
Definitely.
And journeys. Yeah.
The couple things I took out of this too were, there was a line where you said, a therapist said to you, "You're not 9-year-old Benjamin."
Yeah.
You know,
Kelly Ray.
Yeah. We have to say that to ourselves. And if anything, because I've been thinking for days after watching your film, Friends and Neighbors, that it really makes you think about your own life. And for anyone listening, be a detective. If there are things that are unanswered and there are people that are still alive, or you have questions, like I went and reached out to a stepdad I hadn't seen in a gazillion years, and we had this incredible relationship on Zoom up till a couple of years ago before
Good
he passed
you.
Away
yeah.
from ALS. And it was so healing to do that. Yeah, so cool.
Yeah, you know, and I also, like, I unconsciously knew that, like, when she says, it, and Kelly Ray is here in Des Moines, that's why I'm here. She's coming to our screening tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly Ray, basically, we get, like, there's a part of our experience that gets stuck in trauma. So 9-year-old Ben watched his parents have a bitter, acrimonious divorce and lived in a house where domestic violence and a lot of dispute and chaos was the norm. And so there was a part of me that was, you know, I had literal flashbacks, and that not only meant that I had this sort of very visceral sort of like visual and sensory re-experiencing, but it meant it had a bearing on how I showed up in relationships, including with my wife, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's like we think of flashbacks as like, I think we see them as like, okay, so it's a soldier who went to Afghanistan, and when he hears a loud sound, he gets in a crouch and or gets very angry. But a flashback or a somatic re-experiencing, as you probably know, can also be emotional wiring. And so I didn't know any of this stuff, but I knew somewhere, somehow, that that stuff was still relevant. But everyone around me would say, well, that's like my father, God bless him, he meant well. But he'd say, well, that's the past. Let the past go.
Yes.
And you can't let the past go if you don't process it.
That's right.
And so the movie and what I've done over the last few years through things like EMDR is the actual processing. You have to make new sense of it as an adult. And to Kelly's point, Kelly's an EMDR therapist, a trauma therapist, to really go back into it and re-experience it and make better sense of it as an adult.
Yes.
You can't just make an intellectual decision to say, well, that's the past. That just doesn't work.
I agree.
And I didn't know this, and I didn't have permission. And so, again, with the movie, part of my hope was to give people permission. Back to the guy saying, well, aren't you uncomfortable talking about these things? I'm like, well, somebody has to, and you're doing it, and I'm doing it, just to be like, guys, this is pretty normal stuff, and most of us experience some version of this, and the more we talk about it, the less likely it is to have a bearing on how we show up, you know, in the grocery stores or on the highways or all of the moments when people get so dysregulated that they make super bad, super dangerous choices.
Exactly. I have one last question before we wrap up. How did you decide on the picture of you for the film poster?
Oh, that's such a good question. Thanks for asking. A lot of reasons. Mostly, when I think of that scared, sad, hurt little boy, that's them. That's the moment.
Mm-hmm.
That picture was taken by my father in the winter, where my parents were separated and going through the divorce. And every night at dinner, we'd be with one parent or the other, and they were not speaking kindly of one another. And it was cold and dark. And it's also the winter that I began expressing myself, as a writer, and I really began listening to music in a in a way that informed me becoming a musician. But you know, it just was a pivotal moment. I started making movies that winter, and that hat is a winged baseball cap, which was like a fad back then. And I, you know, as you know, I was a marathon runner in New York City. That was one of my healthier coping mechanisms. But I think there was a part of me that just started running at that age, emotionally, unconsciously, psychologically, and then eventually literally, because I didn't want to feel that sadness.
Yes.
And so the visual metaphor for me of that mercury wing, that hat with mercury wings, it just is all right there in that shot.
So
and
cool.
then it ends up being, it's superimposed over a drone photo I took of Wilmington, where I happened to capture a thunderstorm that had a rainbow in it. And I was like, well, boy, it's all right there, right? Because
you symbolic.
Can't really have the rainbow without the cloud, you know?
Yeah, it was so symbolic. I love it.
And this journey is both of those things. You can't heal if you don't feel, you know, you can't get to the rainbow without going through the storm. So it's just all in there. It's just all in there for me.
Well,
thanks for noticing.
Absolutely.
And by the way, so are the helpers, right? They're in the bottom, all the people who, and they're the rainbow, like they're all a different color to signal that, like, it takes the community, it takes each other, it takes people like you and having this kind of conversation to begin to move your way through to something different and better.
You bet. Well, that's a wrap for us, Benjamin. This was so great.
Thank you so much. What a lovely chat.
This was great. So, let's stay in touch, and if people want more information about you, I put everything on my show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org.
Thank you.
Thank you. Congratulations.
You too.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye now.
If you missed any part of this conversation with Benjamin, it will be up within an hour after I wrap. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Janine. This is Get the Funk Out. If you want more information about KUCI, visit kuci.org.